Chapter 4. The Crusade of Iron. The phalanx defied description. Ship was not a big enough word for the home of the imperial fists. Fortress made no allowance for its grace and ability to travel between the stars. It could be defined in several ways, as fortress monastery, temple, relic, the single biggest warp-capable object in all the Imperium, a symbol of imperial might, battle fortress. But none adequately captured the reality in words. Human speech was too limited. Phalanx's mass blotted out the stars. On the sunward side, its spires and towers were lit in brilliant sunlight. The muzzles of thousands of guns protruded from weapons ports. The broad rectangles of hangars and flight bays patterned its decks between enormous effigies of heroic imperial fists. On the dark side, its shadows were absolute, its bulwarks rimed with void frost. None knew its origins. Legends had it that Dorne himself had built the fortress as the ultimate expression of his skill, or that he had found, adrift in space, a relic of the dark age of technology. Whether built by the Primarch or ancient engineers, it had been Dorne's, and the marks of his artifice were all over it. The station had taken damage during the final attack on Ulanor, but it was so huge that the signs of its wounding were not apparent to the naked eye. Phalanx remained one of the most impressive sights in all the dominions of man, a defiant statement against the cold horrors of void and warp. The High Lords communicated little as they and their retinues flew towards Phalanx aboard the POTUS Terrae. They kept to their quarters, each brooding on their own summons. The time for scheming was past. They must play the waiting game. Until the last half day, Phalanx grew slowly. Then suddenly it expanded in size until it became a wall across the sky. Vangarich received overtures from several of the other lords, but ignored them until, only a few hours out from the Imperial Fist's fortress monastery, he sent word to the inquisitorial representatives to join him for refreshments in the observation deck. Veritas and Venand were already present when Vangarich arrived. They looked outwards at the giant foredecks of Phalanx obliterating half the sky. Cyber constructs buzzed around, auger attachments blinking, sniffing the air. Articulated instruments, capable of detecting toxins at one part per 100 million in the ship's gas mix, flickered in and out of their housings like tongues. There were stormtroopers in inquisitorial black at every door and every 30 paces along the lengthy plastile and stone gallery. Vangarich didn't have a single agent among them. Veritas wore his power armor, as usual. Venand looked striking in a tight doublet and breeches, her iron-grey cropped hair coloured silver in the stark sunlight.
"The idea was to enjoy a quiet moment together before the bickering begins again," said Vangarich. "I see you preferred a party."
Veritas swung about, his armour whining. A puff of life-extending gas hissed from around his neck seal.
"Caution is our watchword," he said.
"What about mistrust?" said Vangarich.
"Don't bait, Veritas," said Venand. "These are only precautions."
Vangarich took a tray of 3 goblets from a menial whose eyes, mouth and ears were banded over by constricting iron. Beneath the implants, the organs of sight, speech and hearing were excised, replaced with crude augments that gave such unreliable perceptions of the world that the servant could never have described what he had seen and heard, even had he been capable. There were a number of such mutilated menials attending the party. No servitors, for their programming was too easy to compromise. If he thought about it, and he sometimes did, Vangarich found their deliberate disablement distasteful. But it was necessary. He stopped before another servant, who filled the goblets with dark wine. He carried them over to the Inquisitors, set the tray on an ornate table, and held up 1 goblet to Veritas. The Inquisitor curled his lip.
"Do I look like a fool?" "You don't, Lastan, and I would not take you for one. Therefore this wine is safe. I'm sure your constructs here would detect any attempt on my part to poison you."
"I will not drink with you, Drekan," said Veritas. "There are poisons no device can find."
"Fair enough. Venand, you still trust me, don't you?"
"Did I ever trust you, Vangarich?" she said distantly.
"Apparently not, or we wouldn't have so much company. You are hurting my feelings. This is very fine wine. Venusian. Very rare.
I will drink, but I'll take that one there, said Venant, picking up one of the goblets still on the table and bidding the serf pour again.
Thank you. I feel a little less offended.
He raised the goblet he had offered to Veritas and knocked it against Venant's. Veritas snorted.
Why have you called us? Said Veritas. Are you attempting to shore up your power before we go in to see the Lord Gilliman? I'd expect that sort of behaviour from Eckarth or Lansung, not you.
Did they send you messages too? They sent me messages. I didn't answer them, said Vangorich.
They did. We didn't, said Venand.
Now, I thought you might say that. So, you answered my message. That suggests to me that we have some common ground, said Vangorich.
Maybe, conceded Veritas, but you are becoming ever more slippery, Grandmaster. Your schemes to put Thane in Lord Gilliman's throne were overt and sloppy.
We only went along with it because you agreed, interrupted Vangorich. More common ground, then.
Veritas groaned slightly and sank into his armour.
What is it you want? Said Venand.
It's impressive, isn't it? Said Vangorich. Phalanx, I mean.
You are changing the subject, said Venand.
I am, but as is my usual way, I will get to the point.
Which is? Said Veritas.
Humour me, said Vangorich. That's not my point, obviously. Just look at Phalanx. Huge, magnificent, terrifying. But like so many other imperial works, its initial impression hides a sorry truth. No such thing can be built now in the Imperium. Phalanx is vast, and yet it is not so large as the smallest of the orc attack moons. Like so many of the supposedly overpowering weapons our Imperium possesses, for much of the war it was absent, kept in deep space between Venus and Earth. Do you know it was denied participation in the battle over Terra because its mass would have proved its worst enemy when confronted with the gravity lashes of the orcs? Thane risked it in the third battle for Ulanor, where Curland would not. And look at the damage it has sustained. One only has to look at what became of the throne world's orbital defences to see how useless large ships or stations were against the orcs. And there is a further thing.
He stepped closer to Venand and pointed with his wine.
Those docking piers. There are hundreds of them. They hold space for the battlefields of scores of chapters, but the dozens belonging to the Imperial Fists look lost amid those soaring towers. The halls within will be similarly empty. At their height, the Legiones Astartes each had tens of thousands of space marines. The half a thousand that comprise today's Imperial Fists would be swallowed up by that fortress 100 times over. There was a term used in ancient times, a paper tiger. Now, a tiger was...
I know what a tiger was, Vangorich, said Veritas.
Well then, so you see, this giant weapon was no danger to the orcs. How do you suppose our enemies see us now? We look at Phalanx, at our armies and our space marine chapters, and we see the glorious past. But we do not live in the past. We live now. Our enemies, the Xenos, the followers of the dark, old gods, they look at us and they see weakness.
He stamped his foot upon the deck.
Down there is the cause of that weakness. We cannot let this happen again.
You are drifting close to treason, said Veritas. We will not be complicit in the extermination of the High Lords of Terra. Attempt such an act, and the Inquisition will be forced to move against you.
You see, straight away you threaten me. I am proposing no such thing as assassination. I am performing my role, Lord Inquisitor, as a balance. All I ask is that we three work together to make sure that whatever it is Thane asks of us, the Senatorum does it correctly. We cannot afford to squabble. Look at us. We cannot build another phalanx. We no longer understand our own science. We no longer even understand what our own Emperor wanted from us. The Imperial truth. The Imperial creed. Which is right?
Veritas's lips thinned at that.
Were our ancestors to come from out of the past of the Dark Ages, if they penetrated the veils of old night and stepped into the present, they would laugh at us. Our enemies laugh at us. Soon they will stop and the feasting will begin. Work with me. Keep the Imperium alive.
Veritas and Venant looked at one another. Venant raised her eyebrows at Veritas.
Very well, he said reluctantly. Our alliance continues. But we are but two votes between the three.
It's all we need, said Vangarich.
A toxin started up a frantic bleeping.
Warning! Atmospheric pressure dropping! Vacate the observation gallery! Vacate the observation gallery! Said a droning voice. There we are, as if in evidence. Even this ship is old and worn out, said Vangarich.
A service door clanked upwards, releasing a spider-legged servitor from its cradle with a gush of gas. Its organics jiggled horribly to the march of its mechanical legs as it clambered up the gallery wall towards the source of the leak.
Stabilizing atmosphere, said the droning voice.
Veritas stared at Vangarich suspiciously.
Probe 93, 4A, scan for introduced toxins.
A servo skull swept over them, speeding from one end of the long gallery to another.
None detected,
it said, with its synthesized voice.
See, said Vangarich.
Very well, said Veritas. Our alliance holds. For now.
The Inquisitors departed, their warriors marching out behind them. It amused Vangarich that four of them retreated backwards, covering the Grand Master all the way until they were out of the door. He saluted them with his goblet. Vangarich remained with the deaf, dumb, and blind servants, drinking up the wine, until Phalanx swallowed the Potus Terrae in its cavernous foredeck. Potus Terrae was not a small ship, but the size of a light cruiser. The space it flew into had berths for a dozen more of similar size. They were all empty. Vangarich stood deep in thought for a few minutes, then took an anti-intoxicant and hurried away to prepare himself. Priests, savants, servants, and household troops accompanied the High Lords in great number. They met together in the grand atrium of the ship by the main docking portal. The ornate panels were already flung wide, and a gloriously decorated docking corridor was locked onto the side of the ship. A delay was incurred by squabbling over precedence, in which order the lords should depart the ship and head the procession to meet with the Lord Gilliman. An hour of close argument concluded with a smug Eckarth being given the lead position. Flanked by lines of Lucifer Blacks, his entourage strode down the docking tunnel and out into the main concourse. Vangarich, predictably, had been given the last position in the parade, which suited him fine, even if it did only intensify his opinion that the High Lords were beneath his contempt. He had no attendants, so he emerged alone from the tunnel to find the rest of the High Lords blinking idiotically on the docking concourse. Potus Terrae was lavishly appointed. During his career, Vangarich had had occasion to visit some of the richest halls on Terra and many other worlds. In short, he was no stranger to luxury, but the interior of Phalanx gave him pause. The domed ceiling was over 100 meters high, split into panels painted in exacting detail with murals of the victories of the Imperial Fists chapter and its father legion. The dividers were decorated with gold and precious stones from across the galaxy, and the dome was crowned with a dazzling light carved from a single enormous diamond 30 meters across. Its hard geometric facets split the sunlight into dozens of intersecting rainbows, creating a prismatic display that delighted and confused the eye in equal measure. Four docking tunnels exited into the hall besides the one the High Lords had used. Between them were broad reliefs carved in alien marbles, depicting Heroes of Dawn's line in action. The floor was an exercise in magnificence. A huge mosaic of interlocking swirls, at whose centre was inlaid a giant 7. An honour guard of Imperial Fists veterans awaited the High Lords around the 7 in an open circle. Their armour was flawless and lapped to a high shine, their weapons gleaming, purity seals and honours crisp, red stripes on their helmets and red aquilas on their chests. In the Plaza de Camerata, Vangarich had been impressed by Thane's display. Now more than ever, he realized that the Imperial Fists were more than the brothers in the armor. They were the armor, the colors, the weaponry, and the relics. The men inside were irrelevant. That they were all of Dorne's line was all that mattered. The Imperial Fists lived again. As long as Phalanx remained, or there was a single brother gifted with Rogal Dorne's genetic legacy, they could never die. They were not a wall to break the enemies of humanity, but the idea of a wall that would never fall, could never be torn down, and that would forever be manned. Ideas cannot die. The veteran's captain stepped forward and undid his helm, revealing a battered face crisscrossed with scars. A tattoo of a Gothic cross covered his forehead. A Black Templar once, now an Imperial Fist.
"My lords, I am First Captain Berengard, the Lord Gilliman, Chapter Master of the Imperial Fists, Maximus Thane, bids you welcome to Phalanx." "We are ready to see him," declared Lansung pompously. "Where is he?"
"He awaits you, my lords. This way."
In perfect synchronicity, the Imperial Fists turned about face. The two ends of the circle wound past each other, and the Space Marines formed a square, their captain at its head, and began to march. The Lucifer Blacks, naval armsmen of the Royal Bark, Skitarii of Mars, and other troops of the High Lords, fell in behind the Adeptus Astartes with admirable smoothness. Less smooth was the rearrangement of the remainder of the High Lords' retinues. Eckarth's staff made an undignified scramble for lead position, tangling themselves with Juskina Tull's staff, who, being voidsmen and women, had wandered a little way to admire this most massive of vessels. The Ecclesiarchy entourage to the High Lords lacked direction now the Ecclesiarch was not on the council, and got under everyone's feet. By the time it was all arranged, the warriors of the Imperium were halfway out of the hall, exiting through a monumental arch, crowded with stern-faced space marines and the fallen enemies of mankind. They ascended a staircase wider than an expressway, lit only by baroque lumen globes held upon golden pillars. In the darkness above, finely finished stone echoed to the calls of airborne creatures roosting amid half-glimpsed statues. Despite the life-forms, the steps and stairwell were unsoiled. Vangarich laced his fingers behind his back and sauntered up to join the inquisitorial delegation. There were only half a dozen men and women serving the two inquisitors, all Venans. His inquisitorial convocation aside, put together with the express purpose of eliminating Venan and disbanded soon after, Veritas was never accompanied. Vangarich nodded at Rasnik and Rendenstein, Venan's bodyguards. The acknowledgement made the younger Inquisitor redden. Rasnik had fared poorly against Vangarich's team on Mars.
"Is all this fortress so ornate?" Vangarich asked conversationally. "It's more of a palace than a castle."
"The Primarch was a being of great artistry in many areas. What did you expect?" said Veritas.
"Oh, I don't know," said Vangarich. "Something draftier."
The stairs led into a hall kilometres long. Arrayed along its cloistered sides were the arms, armour, and the mortal remains of extinct Xenos species and subjugated human cultures. Worn plaques of brass over each cabinet detailed the time of their earning. Those nearest the stairs bore dates from before the ascension of the Emperor and were marked with compliance designations from the Great Crusade. The Imperial Fists marched them more than a kilometre along this hall, past a seemingly endless succession of mementos. Models, fragments of metal, captured vehicles, stuffed alien beasts went by until even Vangarich struggled to assimilate it. The Space Marines took an abrupt left-hand turn through another archway. The trophy corridor continued on past this exit so far that its end was lost to perspective. A short corridor led them to a second staircase, smaller but just as grand in decoration, that switched back and forth upon itself. The High Lords went on, doggedly. More than a few of them were old beyond the natural span of men, kept alive by antigerontic drugs and augmentations. Lansung was a fighting man, but out of shape. Vangarich found it no trouble, nor did Venand. Kubik's robes brushed the ground. He seemed to hover above the floor, which, thought Vangarich, he could well be doing. Tull strode forwards, yet still seemed hesitant, as if she might trip at any moment. Sark, Anwar, and Eckarth struggled. Zek projected tension that suggested he wanted to break into a run. Veriold kept marching, his face grim, as he attempted to control his limp. For the ancient Veritas, it was a trial. Though his arm and legs rose and fell without slowing, his face paled, and sweat collected on his lip. For an hour and a half, they walked upstairs and down corridors, until they were hopelessly disoriented. At no time did they see any sign of human life aboard the Phalanx, except those space marines that led them. Somewhere there would be servitors, menials, chapter serfs by the thousand. Thane had kept them out of sight. He presented the Phalanx as a ghost ship, a mausoleum where the past decayed atom by atom under its layers of polish. They went into a corridor whose roof was glazed with armour glass. In this part they saw damage, sections where the glass had been broken and the battle shutters left closed. In one place the marble facing had gone, and the less noble stone revealed behind was cracked and half-melted. The floor there was riven by a chasm bridged over with plasteel plating. They stopped before a gate that, though immense in scale, was modest compared to some they had passed through. "Lord Gilliman Thane is within," said First Captain Berengard. Two veterans took the handles and pushed wide the doors. "Your retinues will wait. We have a hall prepared with refreshments for them."
"My men will accompany me,"
insisted Eckhart, his protestation ridiculous in the face of the scarred, much-decorated captain.
"They will wait and be refreshed," insisted Berengard. "Let them be, Eckhart," called Vangerich. "As if these soldiers with us could stop the Space Marines should they decide to kill us, which I am sure Lord Thane does not intend. Allow your men their leisure. They have marched admirably and deserve a rest from our tedious debates."
The other High Lords split in reaction into those who laughed at Eckhart and those who were outraged at Vangerich's disregard for decorum.
"If the business of government bores you, Grand Master, perhaps you should not have done so much to involve yourself in it,"
blustered Eckhart.
"It is not boring to me. I find everything you say in particular to be most fascinating. I think only of those of us who are forced to listen and not take part."
"You are on Phalanx, my lords," said Berengard. "There is nowhere safer. The Lord Gilliman wishes to conduct this most sensitive of business in total privacy. You will not be allowed to listen, I'm sure. Private but for the ears of the Adeptus Astartes," said Gibran. "Not at all, my lord. Only the Lord Gilliman will remain, I assure you, High Lords. Now," said Berengard, holding up his hand to direct them, "please proceed within. The chapter master is waiting."
For the first time, Vangerich saw the mortal servants of the Imperial Fists upon Phalanx. Dozens of them issued from hidden servants' doors, garbed in yellow, shaven-headed, and bearing a tattooed fist on their left cheeks. 15 of them were armed and armoured in dark yellow carapace. Warrior serfs.
"Please, this way," said the serf spokesman.
A large door was opened down the hall. Tantalising smells wafted out. The High Lord stood firm, however, looking at each other uneasily.
"For the love of terror, are we going to stand here all day?"
growled Zek.
"I shall dismiss my men. I have nothing to fear from the keepers of Terra's walls," said Veriolt eventually.
"I too," said Lansung.
The Lord Commander Militant and the Lord High Admiral purposefully did not look at Vangerich.
"Very well, then," said Eckhart shrilly. "I shall dismiss my servants."
There was some tension from those others attending upon the High Lords, and they left their lords unwillingly. Venan dismissed her entourage with a curt nod. Rasnik left with several backward glances, Rendenstein with not a one. The soldiers and naval armsmen saluted and crisply manoeuvred. If only the High Lords would behave so well, thought Vangerich. There was more muffled debate and pointed looks.
"We are hardly covering ourselves with glory here," Venand whispered to him.
"All hail the mighty Lords of Terra," Vangerich murmured back.
Finally, the High Lords arranged themselves into a group that suited everyone and walked through the door. Vangerich went at the back, a wolf shepherding sheep. He gave Berengard a broad smile as he passed. The first captain frowned back. He knew a threat when he saw one. The doors swung closed. The Senatorum Imperialis was in session. Thane awaited them in a circular chamber walled for much of its circumference with sweeping plain glass. There was a single mullion in the centre, a statue of a space marine, his hands clasped around his sword. The art required to make such broad expanses of glass steel sufficiently strong to withstand the void, let alone battle, was great indeed. In the elegant simplicity of it, Vangarich saw the hand of Rogel Dorn himself. The chamber was at the edge of a cliff, and the carved expanses of stone and metals receded into the distance on either side. Spires and weapons batteries cluttered the view forward. In contrast to many of the chambers they had seen in Phalanx, this was neither large nor ornate. A fine-grained black stone made up the floors, ceiling, and those parts of the walls not fashioned from glass. A large circular table made of the same stone filled half the internal space. Lumens set into the wall and the centre of the ceiling struck angular reflections from the stone's finish. 12 chairs, sized for unaltered human beings, were set at the table, these made of black wood. A single chair, made for a space marine, brought the number up to 13. Thane occupied it. He was fully armoured, his helmet and bolt gun resting on the table in front of him. There was no raw statement of power.
"Lords, welcome to Phalanx. Please, sit."
He held out his hand to indicate the chairs. The High Lords took their seats, approximating their positions back on Terra. Veriolt and Lansung sat together, Veriolt hesitating before taking a place by the Lord Gilliman. Zek was an uneasy satellite to their alliance, drawn in by their adeptus' collective employment of force more than personal common cause. Eckarth sought reinforcement, his words, through proximity to Zek. Tull sat next to Gibran for their mutual interest in the void. Vangarich, who sat where he pleased outside the great chamber, upset Sark and Anwar by seating himself between them and Zek. Venand took a seat by Anwar. Veritas sat between her and Thane, even his power-armoured body made small by the presence of the transhuman.
"I trust you will forgive me for the extra chair, but I thought it impolite to make Veritas stand again," said Thane.
No one answered.
"We are meeting here so that you are under no illusion that what I dictate shall be made law."
"My lord," began Anwar.
"You will wait, Lord Astrapath. I thought Koran rash to enter the high politics of Terra. I have been convinced otherwise. Let me make myself clear. It is your self-interest that made this disaster possible."
"How dare you, Chapter Master? What do you know of government? You are a warrior," said Veriolt.
"Now I am a High Lord. Explain to me, as a man new to politics, exactly where were the armies of the Imperium when the orcs devastated worlds, Veriolt?"
"Heth's responsibility," said Veriolt.
"And yours, once he was killed. His failures were compounded by yours. At least Heth died honourably. More than can be said for you, Lansung. You showed courage. You fought. But of all the lords here, you bear the most culpability. Your fleets should have brought word of the gathering of the orcs. They should have acted in concert. Instead, you spent your years politicking to replace Udin MacDudo. The debacle at Port Sanctus is but the least of your errors. You, my lord, were chasing glory at the expense of our species."
"How dare you impugn my honour!" exclaimed Lansung.
"And how dare you suggest you have any!"
shouted Thane. The High Lords fell quiet.
"The only sense you showed was to hold back your flagship from the disastrous proletarian crusade. You are a fine naval tactician, Lansung, and a good strategist. Both abilities deserted you when you put yourself first. You are many things, but a good politician is not one of them."
As much as Vangarich had enjoyed watching Lansung squirm in the past, he took little pleasure in it then. Lansung had lost weight. His complexion had once been ruddy. Now he was grey. His bellicosity bled out of him, along with his fat. He was a beaten man. Surely Thane could see that he had lost his confidence and that he should be replaced. Such a man was not suitable to lead the navies of the Imperium. Lansung would become hesitant when he should be bold and rash when he should be cautious. Every successful large-scale engagement would only be another step towards catastrophe. Thane turned his attention upon Tull next.
And that crusade. A fine sentiment. The desire to fight, no matter the odds. But the odds would have been so much better had any of you had the sense to consolidate the Imperium's core worlds and withdraw a reasonable force to Terra to defend it. 1 billion armed men could have been within the Sol system in days. That was not the action taken. Instead, what? Scribes, functionaries, menials. An army of innocents sent to the slaughter. The level of ineptitude on display here defies all logic.
The moon was over the palace. It could have struck at any moment. We had no choice, said Tull.
She spoke quietly. Her heart wasn't in her objection.
You would have, had Lansung here not squandered half the Imperium's war fleets in pointless tit-for-tat actions. Courland was right to blockade the moon. He acted well. You acted without thought. Our entire species could have been enslaved. As you excel in war, so shall you excel in peace, Rabute Gilliman, the first to hold this office, said of we Adeptus Astartes. For most of my life I have thought him wrong. There is no peace. There is only war. I thought there was no need for space marines to involve themselves in the ruling of the Imperium. I was wrong. With power left in the hands of men and women such as you, disaster will befall us all.
The High Lords looked aghast. Lansung swallowed hard.
What are you proposing? He said. A coup?
You are Horus returned, said Zek.
He does not intend to eliminate us, said Sark. I would sense it.
Anwar smiled, a ghoulish expression on his emaciated, eyeless face.
Elimination? I propose nothing of the sort, Thane said in disgust. This system of governance was devised by the Emperor himself. I am not so arrogant as to propose it be undone. Where it has failed because it has not been adhered to properly. The Senatorum Imperialis has met in secret for too long. This is my first decree, that the Great Chamber shall be brought back into use permanently. No more meetings in closure. There are not sufficient checks upon the ambitions of individuals among the High Twelve without involvement of the other High Lords and the Lesser Lords. Too much effort is expended by the Masters of Lower Ordos, Adepta, and Officios in seeking the patronage of the High Twelve. While the High Twelve themselves are without the scrutiny of the wider government, they are free to neglect their duty to the Imperium in favour of duty to their Adepta, or worse, their own personal glory.
Closed sessions were only introduced, my lord, to speed the decision-making process in the wake of the First Black Crusade, said Eckarth tremulously.
600 years ago and more. Extraordinary measures have a habit of becoming ordinary, said Thane. This decree will ensure a more proper adherence to the intentions of the Emperor.
You said decrees, Lord Gilliman, said Kubik. Enumerate them for our edification.
He chose a placating human voice for this, surprising Vangarich. Kubik had only ever used his harsh machine voice in the Grand Master's hearing.
If you could lay out the contents of this meeting for us, then we shall be better equipped to proceed and enact your wishes, highest of lords.
Thane gave the Fabricator General a considered look. Kubik's own games had played their part in the Imperium's near downfall.
I have but 3 in total. Once they are done, they are binding. After that, we shall move on to the business of rebuilding. New fleets need to be commissioned, new armies raised. Terra's fortifications must be rebuilt. Thousands of worlds are ruined. All must be restored. This will be your life's work from now on. Service to the Emperor and the Imperium shall be the restitution for your crimes of vanity. Is that clear?
The High Lords looked at him, wordlessly.
These, then, are my other decrees. My second is that there shall be a 4th founding of Space Marine chapters. We are too few to effectively defend the Imperium. 1,000 years after the heresy, our numbers are a fraction of what they once were. To allay your concerns, I swear that I do not intend to reform the legions. The last wall will be disbanded. So much power cannot be one man's to command. I think we can all agree with that. Instead, we shall raise as many new chapters as we have gene seed in the great vaults of Terra to sustain. This must be done swiftly. I shall issue a proclamation as Lord Gilliman and as the chapter master of the Imperial Fists that all chapters shall release a portion of their veterans to provide the initial basis for this founding, the greatest since the first. Gene seed tithing will be doubled for the next century to replenish the vaults. When it is done, there will be hundreds of chapters to ring the Imperium in adamantium and ceramite instead of dozens.
Can such a thing be accomplished? Asked Eckarth. If the genetic material exists, then yes. As a pledge of our continued fealty to Terra, the Adeptus Mechanicus shall undertake to outfit all new chapters with full armoniums and war fleets. I so submit, said Kubik, silkily.
Your offer is appreciated, said Thane. I am pleased I did not have to demand.
The defence of Terra is the defence of Mars, Lord Gilliman, said Kubik.
Are we all agreed? Asked Veriold.
We must not rush into this, said Veritas. We must...
He drew in a huge breath, his entire body shuddering with the effort.
Are you all right? Asked Venant.
Veritas held up a hand and shook his head.
Leave me be. Do we have any choice, Lord Inquisitor? Asked Gibran. If we do not agree, what of it? For Lord Gilliman decrees.
Why would we not agree? Said Zek. This is the plainest sense. More space marines means greater security.
But who shall they answer to?
Gasped out Veritas.
Are there any more objections?
Asked Eckarth. There were not.
Then it is done, Lord Thane.
My third and final decree, said Thane. I will be a crusading lord. The Imperial Fists shall no longer stand upon a wall and look out on our enemies and defy them to come to us. We shall be a mobile fortress, moving ever forward to crush those who would spurn the will of the Emperor, whether they be known or unknown. Dangers cannot be waited upon, but must be rooted out and destroyed ere they pose a risk. Never again shall an enemy of the Imperium enter the orbit of Holy Terra. This we swear. For what use is a wall if all the lands about it are laid waste and occupied by the hateful foe? No longer will we stand in one place. No longer will we take wall names, but we shall become a wall for the whole Imperium. Phalanx will leave before the end of the week, and I will be taking the Imperial Fists with me.
Immediate uproar greeted this statement.
You are the defenders of Terra. It is your chapter world, exclaimed Anwar, his head swinging to and fro as if he would capture Thane in his empty eye sockets.
You defy convention and the wishes of the Emperor, said Eckarth. Imperial Fists have stood upon the walls of the palace since the heresy.
And we shall no longer, said Thane.
He placed his hand palm flat on the table. The gentlest click of ceramite upon stone silenced the High Lords more effectively than a bolt shot.
Listen to me, my lords.
The traditions and obligations of your chapter aside, you are the Lord Gilliman, said Veriold harshly. You cannot simply abandon your responsibilities.
As you lords abandon yours, said Thane, I am mindful of the need for direction within the Senatorum. A weak Lord Gilliman is a bigger danger than the most self-interested of High Lords, and an absent Lord is the weakest Lord of all. But I shall bring my strength and authority to the beleaguered worlds of the Imperium to free them from alien tyranny and speed their reconstruction. Therefore, I require a representative among you, whom I shall raise over the others and invest with my authority to act upon my behalf. Should Terra be threatened, we shall return. But I expect my labours to be long. I may never see the throne world again.
Vangorich looked forward to sinking back into the shadows again.
Drakan Vangorich, Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum, shall be my voice and my hand. I hereby invest him with all my authority. He is to be heeded and treated with as if he were myself, Ah, thought Vangorich. Any of you who have misgivings, do not fear. Thane gave Vangorich a steely look. It was nothing to the poisonous glare Venant gave him. The threat of my return will be enough to ensure his good behaviour.
5 days of intense debate followed. The High Lords were given chambers near to the small conference room. Their entourages were thinned to the bare minimum, and their lives were run to the harsh schedule of the Adeptus Astartes. Isolated, kept from their servants, and wholly at the mercy of Maximus Thane, the negotiations were concluded quickly. When the High Lords emerged, dazed and exhausted from their discussions, many matters had been decided. The details of Terra's rebuilding, the raising of new regiments, an Imperium-wide survey of what remained after the attacks of the Orcs, a pledge from the Inquisition to reorder itself, and not least, the beginning of the Fourth Founding, all were examined in depth. What would once have taken months, if it were finished at all, was concluded before the week was out. A day's feasting followed. The Imperial fists were as exacting in their leisure as they were in their business. The bottomless stores of phalanx were opened. Fine victuals from the length and breadth of the Imperium were served, while the newly reconstituted Imperial fists deepened their bonds of brotherhood and entertained the Lords of Terra with dazzling displays of gladiatorial skill. All was done. Phalanx readied to depart. The lords of the other chapters that made up the last wall came and went. Whole fleets hung in the void by the giant star fort while their masters conferred with Thane. The flotillas of the Space Marines were greatly diminished. Some chapters were down to a handful of ships, but they were proud, and they were ready. Over the course of the next few days, the Lord Gilliman broke from his arranging of the chapter's deployment to speak with each of the High Lords alone. Kubik was first, and when his conference was done, he left alone aboard a swift Mechanicus Pentair. Zek insisted he be next because he was needed on Terra. Thane indulged him, and he departed after their meeting also, as did Venand and Veritas. Lansung had the ships of the reforming Segmentum Solar Fleet parade past Phalanx before joining them on his flagship, Autocephalax Eternal. Only a few of the High Lords remained behind after their conferences. Ekath and Gibran sought constantly to win Vangorich over with honeyed words. The others avoided him. Finally, Vangorich was summoned. Thane had left him to last, with a sufficient space between the previous meeting and his own to upset a lesser man's ease. Vangorich was not bothered in the least. It happened so. Vangorich was exploring an enormous library of rare texts when three Imperial fists marched him up 100 stairs without saying a word, besides, "Thane will see you now."
"Now I know how a condemned man feels," Vangorich said, glancing back longingly at the books.
The Space Marines ignored him. The Chapter Master was in a private strategium atop one of the central towers of Phalanx. Its sweeping views put Vangorich in mind of the Cerebrium on Terra. Out beyond the countless gun barrels and docking piers, ships moved in number. It was almost enough to persuade Vangorich that the Imperium retained some strength. Vangorich announced himself with a cough. Thane would have heard him already, but the Chapter Master was making a point of studying the pile of papers on his desk and the multiple hololithic star systems hanging at eye level in the room.
"You wanted to see me, Lord Gilliman?" Vangorich asked.
Thane looked up, and Vangorich reconsidered his opinion. The Lord Gilliman looked genuinely distracted.
"You are here. Good. I will not keep you long, Lord Protector, and I apologize for your long wait. Ground must be prepared before tactics are discussed."
"I am your tactic," Vangorich said mildly.
"You are aware of that. You're not the only game player on Terra, Grandmaster. It is time to show your mettle."
"I do love a challenge," said Vangorich.
He looked about for a chair, but all of them were sized for Space Marines.
"Kubik, you must watch him closely," Thane said bluntly.
"I had intended to," said Vangorich. "His empire within an empire has shown alarming separatist tendencies.
that he is the most powerful of all the High Lords, and his most annoying characteristic is that we need him more than he needs us.
Thane grunted in affirmation.
That's why you did not publicly dress him down as you did the others, said Vangorich. You are getting good at this.
Diplomacy is an art I am having to learn fast. The Adeptus Mechanicus are not completely a part of the Imperium, although we treat them as if they were. And though Kubik honoured the ancient alliance between Mars and Terra towards the end, that was not inevitable.
He only did it when he had been found out. If he had not been found out, though?
You see my concerns.
Oh, Lord Thane, I share them, exclaimed Vangorich. Still, the priests of Mars have gained a lot of knowledge from the Xenos. It might be that they are satisfied with what they've learned.
Or they changed their minds when they realized that they could not survive on their own, Thane said. For the time being, our two realms remain interdependent, but I do not trust the Fabricator General. This new knowledge must not be kept from the Imperium. They hoard too much to themselves already. He has agreed to deploy the Xenos tech in the destruction of Ulanor.
You've asked him to destroy it?
It lies too far from our current borders to be watched effectively, said Thane. I will not have it forgotten again. If the Orcs returned once, they could do so in the future. Ulanor shall be wiped from the galaxy.
I am amazed you convinced Kubik to do that, said Vangorich. I am impressed, as a matter of fact. There is a lot of Xenotech upon the planet he would dearly love to possess.
The priests of Mars cannot be allowed to have more of the Orcs' devices. It is not only because their power must be held in check. They risk corruption. There is a psychic mark on the machines of the Orc. On Ulanor, the beast reached out into the minds of our warriors and destroyed their reason. My librarians fear a vestige of the beast's rage may taint their artifacts forever. Allowing such into the hands of the adepts of Mars is unacceptable. Kubik might see the sense in ridding the galaxy of Ulanor, but whether he does or doesn't, destroying it will be a test of his loyalty. Thane went on. He will be forced to use his new devices in plain sight.
I doubt Kubik does anything he does not wish to, or that does not benefit him.
Thane looked down at Vangorich. Make sure he complies. If there is any deviation from the plan to destroy the world, contact me immediately, and I shall return to deal with him.
So war with Mars is still a possibility, said Vangorich. I don't suppose I need to tell you we cannot afford it.
I shall trust in the Emperor that it does not come to that. Kubik will comply. I have made it clear to him that his loyalty to the Emperor is under question. If he were willing to risk a direct confrontation between Mars and Terra, it would have occurred by now. They have weighed the options, seen the consequences, and found the status quo to be the better choice. But still, stay aware of whatever schemes he might concoct.
As you wish, my Lord Gilliman. I shall gladly do as you command, said Vangorich.
Tomorrow you shall wield a power neither of us wanted in my name.
You have had similar, my lord, in the last wall. The power you wield as Lord Gilliman is no different to that.
I disagree. It is entirely different, said Thane. I do my best to rid myself of both. I have dispatched the Sons of Dawn to scour the galaxy. Many return to their homeworlds to begin their efforts there. Besides the new chapters, all existing Adeptus Astartes forces have suffered casualties and must replenish and rearm. We are no different. 3,000 potential neophytes are en route to Phalanx from Terra. This mass method of selection is unusual, but it will serve. Phalanx is amply equipped with testing grounds, so they will undergo trials as soon as we commence our journey. There is much to be done. The chapter masters will rally what troops they can near their home systems and begin reconquest and rebuilding.
I imagine Veriold choked on his moustache when you told him that.
Damn him and his predecessor, said Thane darkly. The disorganization that led to this debacle is over. Veriold can watch and approve, or he can be replaced.
I have been informed of the intentions of the Crimson Fist's excoriators, the remaining Iron Knights and the rest. But where will you go, my lord?
Thane smiled admonishingly at Vangorich. You are not stupid, Vangorich. I suspect you have already guessed. Although I am no longer a Fist Exemplar, I owe an honor debt to see that the chapter does not die. We go to Idolica one final time. It is as good a place to start my crusade as any.
Are you sure it is the best course of action, my lord? There are systems of higher strategic value nearer and in greater need.
The Sons of Dawn do not abandon each other, and they do not neglect their legacy. I have an obligation. I do not expect you to understand.
Thangorich laced his hands together in the deep sleeves of his robes. He was treading dangerous ground.
So, might I ask, my lord, have you had any word from your brothers of the Fists Exemplar?
That made Thane uncomfortable. His fists clenched.
None. They were last seen at the Vandis system. I guess your opinion, Lord Protector. You suggest they are dead, but I saw them make the Mandeville Point myself, and so I cannot accept that first Captain Zerberin's force is destroyed until it is presented to me as a solid fact. They are unaware of it, but they are the Fists Exemplar now. It would be a tragic irony if my resurrection of the Imperial Fists doomed my original order to extinction. That is a possibility that I have to consider. If so, a new Brotherhood shall take Idolica as its home. If one chapter can be resurrected, so might others.
I understand. If more of us showed such solidarity, then maybe this would not have happened.
Thangorich stood a little taller, presenting an aspect of himself he usually hid by careful posture and body language. Maximus Thane knew Thangorich was dangerous, but for a moment he saw clearly who he was dealing with. An intelligent, careful man, the worst kind of killer.
I will oversee the rebuilding of Terra. I shall ensure your wishes are adhered to, my lord.
Thane looked out through the armor glass over the spires and peaks of Phalanx.
I am trusting you to make this work, Thangorich. You have implied many times that one man might make a better ruler than 12 lords. I honestly have no idea if you truly wished Veritas to be that man. It does not matter. Now is your chance to prove theory. Lead them wisely. And remember, Kubik is not the only High Lord I would return to Terra to replace.